Why are businesses like HelloVet choosing Apple products and services?
So we started the business 2 years ago. We had a few people who were used to PCs, and this was their first foray into Macs. But it's been super smooth getting everyone onto those devices, and everyone seems really, really happy.
Find out how Mac can help you run and grow your business at apple.co/HelloVet.
Today, you learn a simple framework to turn pain into momentum, how to name what happened without reliving it, interpret integrational patterns, and build daily rituals that steady your nervous system. Stay tuned to the end for 5 actions that you can start this week. And if it helps, follow the show and subscribe on YouTube at Stacey Chalemi Advisor. One tap helps more people get real tools. Now, my guest today is Willie Handler. He's the author of Out from the Shadows, Now Write an Integrational Trauma. Willie, it's a pleasure to have you here, and I'd like to welcome you to the show. Now, I want to just get right into it. Now, in 90 seconds, what is the arc that happened? How did it shape you? And what was the turning point toward healthy healing?
So the process of writing, which is very much, I think, underplayed. It was a process in which I was able to work through a lot of my own trauma, and change. And the whole process was very much transformational, and basically has now allowed me to pass on what I've learned to others who are in the same position I am.
I love that. Now, also, I would like to ask you, what was the moment you realized that you were coping and not healing, and what changed first?
Well, the interesting thing is that I was totally unaware that I had any trauma, which is kind of ridiculous because both my parents were Holocaust victims and extremely traumatized. And I walked around thinking that, well, it didn't impact on me.
Right.
Absolutely did. And so when I decided I was going to write a memoir and write my family story, the process of trying to remember stories from my childhood and growing up, as the stories started coming back to me, there was this rush of trauma that I had buried for decades, just came out all at once.
Now, when it all came out at once, was it repressed emotions that were repressed inside you, that when you were writing this and you were learning about all these different things, it just started to bring up a stir of emotions maybe in your subconscious that you didn't even know was actually there?
I think it was very gradual. It wasn't like one morning I woke up and going, I'm crazy. I started building a lot of anxiety started to build up. In fact, I had anxiety my whole life. I didn't realize why, but there was a lot of anxiety, and certain things began triggering it, and it just became worse and worse. I remember one night, I remember the date vividly, that I was up all night having a massive anxiety attack, so bad that I actually had to call a mental health helpline. And it was then I knew I needed to do something different, and I needed to heal myself.
Yeah. And which belief did you retire, and which belief did you replace it with to get another outcome, another feeling of relief?
That's so complicated. It really is. I think part of my whole transformation that I went through took me from being this damaged, it's not a good word, damaged, but Certainly, somebody with mental health problems. The transformation with the writing and also with therapy. I can't discount my psychotherapy because the person I've been dealing with has been wonderful. From being sort of a victim, so to speak, to an advocate. And now I speak out about trauma, and especially intergenerational trauma, which has now become my area of expertise, but about anti-Semitism, about Holocaust denial. So these are things that I would never have done 10 years ago, that these are things I do on a regular basis.
I think people don't realize sometimes, but the way our parents, they go through things in life, and they, what we happens is that we carry the environment we grew up in. We kind of we capture a lot of those behaviors, and we bring them with us to the, in our adulthood. And then a lot of times, even though they might not be healthy behaviors, we repeat them. And then it affects our children if we have children. And then those children are affected by it. And that's why we have more than 80% of people in the United States that have dysfunctional families because of this, because one generation has been affected, and it goes to the next generation and the next generation and the next generation. And when you're talking about all that baggage that you receive during your childhood years, and it carried through into your adult years, for someone who is listening in active pain today, what would you say would be the first safe step that they could take in the next 24 hours?
Well, that's interesting, and I just want to point out that this whole idea of passing on trauma had been during my writing process had been on my mind the whole time. Is what do I tell people about how they stop the transfer of their trauma to the next generation and the next one and so forth? And I have them. I think. I just in the last week I finished the book, and that was the last chapter I wrote. So that's a sort of a preamble. And in it, the key to it is really there's a couple key. One is to heal yourself. First, you have to heal yourself. Now, if you can heal yourself, you're less likely to pass on that trauma. And so you have to look at if. So you have to look after yourself. So you have to deal with your own trauma, and there's multiple ways of doing it, whatever would work for you. But and then the next thing is communication. And you have to be able to speak to your children or your grandchildren and address their fears, address their care. There should be no secrets, family secrets. I spoke to over 100 people who were quite traumatized, and so many of them grew up not knowing all kinds of things about their families, that they literally, after their parents died, started doing research, just as I did, to find out what happened. That should not have existed in that person's family. They should know and understand what happened in the past and why things are better now. Because, and to me, that's the key. Those things, heal yourself, speak to your kids, don't hide things from them. But as well, they need to be explained in an appropriate level.
100%. I agree with you. And there's so many times I've asked so many questions about my family life from before, why? And, well, we didn't talk about those things back then. I can't really give you all the answers, and it is very trying on a person when they don't know a lot about their history. They don't understand, it's like a puzzle with missing pieces, and you're trying to figure out, and you want to finish the puzzle, but you don't have the pieces. And that could be very stressful for a lot of individuals.
Yeah. So I have two grandsons, 7 and 9, and they each have a signed copy of my memoir that they cannot read. They cannot read it. It's not written for kids their age. They're good readers, but But I've told them at a proper age, you're going to read it, and they're lo really looking forward to reading it. But right now, you can ask me any questions you want, and I will explain it to you as best as I can. But those books were written for adults and not kids, and they're cool with that. And so, it's not hiding anything. I will tell you what's in the book, but at an appropriate level.
And that's a very good point, because a lot of times people, they talk to children like they're adults, and that actually traumatizes children because they're not emotionally stable enough to take in that information, understand it, absorb it, and it actually does more harm than it does good.
That's right. And when and it's part of it is part of it is teaching kids, how to deal with their own emotions. And so, there are times where they're sad. Well, it's appropriate to be sad. Or if they're angry, well, you have a good reason to be angry. But, you help them overcome those emotions, because it's not good to be sad for a long time or angry for a long time.
Now, how do you tell your story without re-traumatizing yourself, and what's your structure or your boundaries?
Well, for the longest time, I couldn't. It was really difficult. But now, I think the combination of, like working with my therapist, who did I first tell my story to? My therapist. And then it gets to, and yeah, there were tears involved at times, and I worked way through it, and so on and so forth. And over time, the thing I feared most was talking about myself became empowering, and that was part of the transformation, is that now I will gl that's why I'm here. That I could not possibly talk a couple of years ago, I could not possibly do this podcast. And so that's part of the process, is that now it's empowering. So it's a process. And so you can't go from being a messed up person to a less messed up person overnight. It's that process is healing. And too often I see people who abandon it because, let me tell you, it was hard. It was very, very difficult. I quit therapy several times and scrambled back. And so, and that's kind of the message I have.
It's very hard therapy. It's not easy, but it's very rewarding at the end. At the end, you come across, it's hard to overcome it. It's hard to deal with those feelings, but once you deal with it, it's like a, I always say it's like a rainbow at the end. It's painful while you're going through it. It's painful, trying to get through it. But then, once you do, it's like a sense of relief that comes, and you're able to actually talk about things and cope with things, and the pain has decreased tremendously, and you can deal with the emotions that you have.
And I can tell you along the way, because of the kind of stuff that I was dealing with and things that were going on around the world, globally, there were many days where I was seriously traumatized, and or triggered, and you don't really. There's no cure for trauma. What you learn is to manage it. And it's still in you, but you know how to deal with it. You recognize a trigger and you set up your defenses. And it's like kind of like it's kind of like a football quarterback. He has the ball in his hands and he checks the defense and sees what the best play would be at that moment in time. That was actually a lousy analogy, but anyways. I'll try later with something else.
All right, that sounds good. So as you what you went along, how do how are you able to, retell your story? Like do you when you speak with someone, do you are from talking about it so much and talking about what your therapist, has that given you the strength to actually be able to deal with it and be able to speak, openly without getting so emotional and without it, your emotions taking over you?
Well, I think it's a couple of things that kind of are working at the same time. For
Right.
one thing is talking about it becomes normalized. And so it's like me talking about the New York Yankees. Like like without pulling your hair out. So or whatever. And no, but it becomes normalized. And so something that I had difficulty doing becomes normalized. But the other part is how to, is that as you learn how to manage your triggers and your and manage trauma, then you can speak about it without getting emotionally worked up. And so I'm talking about it now and I'm smiling half the time. So, and then, but it's true. And that's kind of, that's what happened. That it becomes normalized and managing the trauma is becomes almost second nature. And that's the key to how to deal with real, I, and it really doesn't matter what the source of trauma is. It could be because of, childhood trauma, inherited trauma, like such as intergenerational trauma, or it could be from sexual abuse or anything like that. Whatever it is, it's the same kind of promise because trauma is trauma.
Exactly. That's so true. Now, when the body spikes, heart rate, shallow breath, what's your 2-minute reset that someone can try right now when it comes to dealing with trauma?
Well, I learned a lot of sort of grounding exercises, and I use multiple things. Might be the right kind of music. Sit down and or just sitting on my chair and breathing deep with and with my feet on the ground, or going out for a walk. There's some wooded sort of wooded areas around me, and I will just walk in the trails among the trees, and that does it. So there are so many different kinds of grounding exercises. People just have to find the one that's right for you. People meditate. There's so many. It's almost unlimited. Just find what works for you.
I love that. Now, what micro rituals did you stack? Did you stack morning and night to stabilize energy and sleep?
What I did to sleep.
Many people, when they're dealing with trauma, they have a very hard time, when it
Oh,
comes to,
yeah. Well, I went several years with not much sleep, and now I sleep great. What do I do to get? I tried so many different things. So many. I tried serotonin, was it serotonin, right? Or is it melatonin? I can't remember which one. I
Melatonin.
tried, that's right. I tried, what is it now? I tried all kinds of different things. A magnesium, cherry juice. Someone tell me sour cherry juice. I tried them all. None of them worked. You know what worked?
What?
As I began to heal, my anxiety level started to drop, and without anxiety, I could sleep pretty good. And I think that, and that is a lot. It's interconnected. Now, there's many different issues about, I tried don't drink alcohol after a certain hour, don't drink caffeine after a certain hour. I tried them all. It really didn't make a difference. But as my anxiety level dropped off, sleep returned. And I think I'm now sleeping more than I have in 50 years. That's no joke. And I realize now I've lived my whole life with a lot of anxiety.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people also struggle with energy. When they're feeling stressed and they have trauma in their life, they don't even want to get out of bed. A lot of people, they just don't see a need for it. They just don't. They have no urge to keep, to get up in the morning and breathe the fresh air and look out the window and maybe have a cup of coffee or a tea to start the day. When you were going through so much trauma, how did it affect you, and how were you able to, bring back the energy and the momentum to live that quality of life?
Well, I didn't. I that wasn't a problem for me because that to me that sounds like chronic depression, and I wasn't suffering from depression, but I had a lot of anxiety, and the anxiety can have the opposite effect, which is it keeps you active and busy even when you're exhausted, and so that wasn't really an issue for me. Except, interestingly enough, the last 6 months, I just intensely writing, it's literally every day. And the last 3 months, I had a tremendous amount of fatigue. I had no energy. I couldn't get out of bed, just like that. It wasn't depression. It was exhausting. I think it was just exhaustion, because I'm not as young as I used to be. Nobody's as young as they used to be, mind you. But I was trying to work at a pace that I hadn't done in maybe a couple decades, and I was just getting burnt out. And so I think but it's a sort of a related thing. And what I was doing. Was I had to start building in breaks to sort of to refresh and re-energize myself. But if you have chronic depression, it isn't going away unless you take steps to sort of resolve it. And again, that involves some type of professional help, I think. Chronic depression is not something you can overcome on your own, I don't think. I'm not an expert.
Now,
But
isolation is. Oh, go ahead.
I should add a lot of people, the reason I can talk about a lot of this stuff is since I've been very open and out about my mental health, I get a tremendous number of people who are reaching out. Which is like a byproduct. I'm going, I'm an author, not a health professional.
That's true. Well, there's so many people in this world that suffer from mental health of some sort, especially when it comes to trauma. So many people have gone through, trauma. Most people have gone through trauma, whether it's in their childhood years or in their adulthood years. Many people have experienced trauma, and everyone, has a difficult time, dealing with trauma. We all deal with it in different ways, and there's no right or wrong way. It's just trying to find a way that works for them. But to be able to heal is huge. Now, I know isolation is common. What's your script to ask for help without feeling like a burden? Because that's one of the biggest things I hear from people. I don't want to ask for help. I feel like I'm inconveniencing somebody. And I see so many people that need that help, that need that support, that are struggling, with their life, but they just don't feel like asking for help because they feel like they're a burden.
I've been there. I've been all over. I grew up with not a lot of support from my parents. So I learned I had to do everything on my own. I grew up never asking people for help. My wife would bug me. You're struggling with this or that, whatever. Get some help. No. I'm doing it myself. And I'm still a little bit there. I'm still a little bit there because I also have trust issues. So that's an issue I'm still struggling with. Because you end up becoming overwhelmed. And so my advice for asking for help, there actually are many, many people. You'd be surprised. There are many, many people willing to help you if you only ask. The problem is you feel uncomfortable asking, and you have to kind of you need to sort of push back there. First thing, professional help, that's not an issue, right? You're paying them. But there's people around you who will support you if they know you're in need. And so that's who you lean on first. Maybe not all family members, because I listen, there's family that are highly dysfunctional, but there are family members who will support you. And if not, there are close friends, whatever. And everyone's situation is different, but people don't know you're struggling unless you say so.
That's so true. That's so true. Now, setbacks happen. What's your 24-hour reset so a slip doesn't become a spiral?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite get that.
So slipbacks happen. So, you're healing, you're getting out of the trauma, you're starting to feel better, and then something throws you off. It could be a song you hear, it could be something
Yes,
that
okay.
somebody says to you.
That happens all the time. That's like that's normal. That's life. That and also the healing process is not flat. It's a roller coaster. Wonderful ride. It's a roller coaster. And so when you're feeling great, you're feeling great. You think, oh, I'm cured, I'm great. And then bam, something hits you. And so you have to kind of understand that that trigger is temporary. You're gonna be able, you'll move on. You'll learn from it. You'll recognize it. The next time you see it, maybe you'll be more ready for it. Something like that. And so you have to, because when you're in a low, you feel like you're never getting out. And you have to look back and remember, well, remember the last time, and so on and so forth. And so this whole process of getting better is not linear. And so be prepared for to crash a few times, and you kind of learn. And after you do, and you're feeling better, and I do this, I look back and say, what happened? What caused it? What could I have done to stop it from happening? What did I do to get better, to get out of it? And those are things you have. So it takes a lot of sort of introspection, and you have to be able to understand. You have to, if you don't understand yourself well, you're not going to be able to do that.
100%. Now, in plain English, what's the integrational trauma, and how might it show up in everyday life?
Intergenerational trauma is okay. It is trauma. So somebody who's traumatized, if it doesn't kill them, if a traumatic event doesn't kill them and they actually survive, that trauma, and especially if that trauma can change your genes. And it doesn't change your gene sequence, but it can alter your genes and get stored in your genes. And this is kind of, and I'm trying to plain language it as much as possible, and gets inherited. So I can give you a great example. I spoke to someone whose mother was traumatized by the dogs, the vicious dogs that the SS guards had at a concentration camp. And she was terrified of dogs. Well, Her daughter was also terrified of dogs. Nothing, no incidents triggered it other than the fact that genetically she inherited that fear. And so all kinds of things from that trauma can be passed down to people. I could go on all day, all the things that I've seen that people inherited from their parents, and it's personality, and fears and attitude, and it's not verbalized, it was just passed down genetically.
Now, boundaries with loved ones. What's one of the one sentence a listener can use this week that is firm and kind? A lot of times when it comes to trauma, people experience trauma because they a lot of times they haven't set boundaries in their life, or they haven't set enough of boundaries. And what are some things that people could do this week that's firm and kind, but yet they're starting to create boundaries. And so they don't get hurt and they don't get overly used in a sense.
I tell, and I've done this, I tell people that you need to really evaluate your relationships and hang around the people that are good for you and let loose the people who aren't. It's not an easy thing to do, but I learned over time that there are people who are going to impede on your recovery, and you need to stay away from them. And I have some I some of the people I interviewed are now my friends, and they reach out all the time on advice on how to manage their own trauma. Because they've seen that I've been able to do it, and they ask for direction, and that's one of the things, is that one person, their sibling is a source of so much trauma, and I'm going, you need to cut yourself off from from that person, because it's not going to help your recovery. So it's a tough choice. In some cases, a tough choice to make, but. You have to look after yourself first before you can look after other people.
100%. And I think that's where the big mistake happens, is that a lot of people look, for others before they look for themselves. And you can't help others unless you help yourself first.
Exactly. And I look back at my parents, and there was a time where I was a little angry or not happy with my parents or whatever. I look back now and I'm going, oh my God, these people went through such horrible things. They were so badly traumatized. They did their best. And so, where was I going on this? You kind of. But looking at, and so that, oh, I remember. So they weren't the best caregivers. They weren't the best caregivers because they were never given an opportunity to heal and to recover, because such a thing didn't exist back then. My God, they didn't even recognize PTSD until the Vietnam War, which was 20. Oh, 20 years after World War II. And so it's very, and so it's very important, if you want to do a good job looking after your other people, you have to look after yourself, because otherwise you just won't do a good job.
100%. Now, what role do community and story play, and how can someone build a circle if they don't have one yet?
I guess there are, and one of the things, another thing that I did, I gotten into so many things, is I created these circles. And so there are people who create them, and you have to sort of kind of you have to start searching for them. And today, with social media and the internet, it's not so hard to find anymore. And so what you need is a safe place that you can, beyond therapy, a safe place where you could express your feelings and not be judged, because everybody else in the room is kind of in the same shape as you, and have people listen and get some feedback. Those things are all very important, and to realize how many other people are like you. And you hear someone else's story, and maybe they came up with a resolution. You're going, aha, that's me, and that's something I should do. So, I those are also that's also a very important tool. So, thank you for bringing that up.
Oh, you're welcome. Today listeners were promised five concrete actions. What would you share? What are those five concrete actions that they could do to start healing themselves and creating a better life for them, from going from trauma to the healing process and working their way slowly to that area that they want to make, that they want to be in?
If you can, I think it's important to find professional help, but not everyone can afford it, right? And not if it's if you have an insurance carrier that doesn't cover it, then it might make it much more difficult. My therapist, I'm paying out of pocket, and I worked out a discount even. And so don't forget to ask that as well. But that's very important. Finding other outlets other than professional help, which is like, a circle of people who are like you, or writing. Writing is very therapeutic, even if you're just writing for yourself, like in a journal. Look at your relationships, and keep those relationships that are healthy, and the unhealthy ones you need to ditch, because that's going to help your recovery. The journal is another important reason. Another important reason in the journal is to keep track of what traumatizes you, what you did about it, how you got out of it. So those are important things you have to learn about yourself, right? You have to, that's part of the healing process, is a little bit of introspection and figure out why am I acting like this? What caused it? What triggered it? What, and over time, you will recognize patterns and be able to respond to it. And the last thing is, love yourself. You have to learn to love yourself.
100%. Yes. So true. So true. Now, you wrote a wonderful book that's right now on sale. Can you tell us about that book that you've written?
Yes. It is called Out of the Shadows. I wrote it, came out November of 2024. It's actually been very well received. And I call it a memoir, but it's not entirely a memoir, because it's in fact, sometimes I call it an investigative memoir, because there's so much of my story I had to actually spend 2 years researching. And so the first part of it is my family's history, because I did not know it. And in fact, I know a lot of people don't know their family history. Guess what? How do you know where you're going if you don't know where you came from? That's what I always tell people. And so the first part of it is my family's history, right to the end of World War II. And my parents were both Holocaust survivors, so It's not a pretty story, but it's very detailed and very my approach was very a matter of fact. It's written for people who are not Jewish, and so it's using language that they will understand and be able to follow. And so that's the first part of it is and where all that trauma came from. The next part of it is growing up, my childhood, what I experienced, what was different about it, what I liked or didn't like about it, what kind of saved me, and why I became the person I did. And the last part of it is more around is the real introspection, which is I talk about my own intergenerational trauma, but and beyond that, which is I talk about anti-Semitism because there's a lot of because A, anti-Semitism is what caused my trauma, which was hate, right? And I talk a lot about hate as well, not just love, and so it sort of that part of it sort of ties all the loose ends together, the relationship between my trauma and hate for Jews, and because it's still traumatizing, and it's still triggering because it's still out there, and so it's a in that respect. It's not a long book, but it's quite comprehensive. It covers a lot of territory, and if when you read the reviews on Amazon, you'll be I was floored by what people thought of it because I wasn't quite sure how people would react to it, and it's been all positive. And so again, it's out of the shadows. Growing up with Holocaust survivor parents, and my name's Willie Handler. In
Now,
case you forgot.
do you have any besides your books, do you provide any other services to others?
Yeah, I've been providing too much free therapy. No, that's not true. I do presentations now, virtual and in person. I'm going to be in the spring of sometime in the spring of 2026. I'm going to be in New York doing one or two talks. I talk about my family's history because there's a lot to learn from that. That ex that whole experience and that whole period of time. I talk about Holocaust denial. I talk a lot about intergenerational trauma. That's probably what most people are most interested. And I talk a little bit about anti-Semitism and Holocaust denial. And so these are the kind of the themes that I speak about, and which I think I covered here as well. So. And so I'm always available to do talks.
I love that. This has been amazing, Willie. I appreciate you so much. I appreciate you for coming on the show and sharing your story. And I think it's amazing how you've gone through so much trauma. You didn't let it stop you in life. You kept on going. You found a solution to help you heal. And then you took action and you healed and you learned about, some of the things that had interfered in your life. You went back into history and tried to figure out things and tried to understand why things were the way they were. And you were able to put those pieces to that puzzle together. And then it helped you in the long run. And I think it's so important because so many people suffer from trauma in life. And the problem is that the healing process is a very hard process. And most people don't even know how to begin. Most people are in denial. Most people have a hard time accepting it.
Yeah.
And and you show them, how to begin and you guide them along the way, which I think is great. And your memoir is a true, example of that, just by sharing, everything that you've been through.
And I it's a, just to add to that, people want to reach out. Maybe the best way to do it is I have a Substack account. I transfer my newsletter to it. I transfer my blog to it. And I write little pieces a couple times a week, as well as my newsletter. People subscribe. I'm sure they will get a lot out of it because I talk about all these different kinds of issues in the short little 500 to 1,000 word little pieces. And I think those who have been subscribing to my account, I think are very appreciative. So, if people are not familiar with Substack, it's a relatively new platform that does all kinds of different things. And so if you look at it online and then you find the account, the platform is on, there's a web version and an app. And if you search for me, you can subscribe to my newsletter.
I love it. Yes. That's wonderful. And so I really appreciate today, and I appreciate you, and I appreciate your story and all the guidance and wisdom that you shared today to help others. And I wish you the very best, and I look forward to having you back on the show, and we could talk some more about trauma and the healing process on how to heal from trauma, because that's something many struggle with and they need help with. So thank you so much for being you and for helping so many people along the way.
Thank you. It is my pleasure. That's what I want to do. I want to help people.
Yes, and you are. That's the wonderful thing about it. Thank you so much. You have a great day.
You too. Thank you.